Hey, folks, it's Spoiler in Time. I'm Tom Merritt. Brian Brushwood is here as well as Christy Cates, and we are going to spoil you good today. This is the show where we take all that hard work we do on Cord Killers, our main show, and then we watch stuff and we talk about it. So we're going to finish up the show talking about the latest episode of Mr. Robot, episode 6 of season 3. But before that, we will talk about Serenity, the Firefly movie, as we wrap up our rewatch of Firefly. But Brian, we need to properly welcome Christy.
Yeah, well, the only way to do that is for me to say, welcome, Christy.
Thank you, everyone.
Well, before we get into all the spoilage, why don't we check in on the standings of the winter movie draft?
This is why you are a brilliant magician, Brian.
Why is that?
Because you started that and said, well, the only way to do that is like, oh, he's gonna say welcome, Christy, or something funny. And then you're just like, the only way to do that is to, I'm like, oh, no, he's going to go into the movie draft. And then you went, welcome, Christy. I was like, damn it. He convinced me 2 + 2 = 5. He really did.
All right. So we had Justice League. Not the best.
Okay, we are not spoiling Justice League on today's show. Why is that? None of us saw it.
And by none of us, we mean America. Apparently, nobody in America went to go see it.
Well, now 96 million is not nobody. Like this actually beats most of the movies in its opening weekend that have come out this fall. So DC fans, like, let me give you your props. Movie is not an utter failure when compared to all movies, but when compared to the expectations of Justice League and the reunion of, well, union, I guess, not reunion, of Batman, Wonder Woman, Flash, Cyborg, Superman. Everybody expected it to do better.
There's no universe where I could see them being especially thrilled with this opening, given how hard, like, they made all the, they copied straight out of Marvel's playbook to, they followed the same plan. They made all these other movies to act as vehicles to attract interest on this. And then they recognized, this is too dour, not enough joy. Let's get Joss Whedon on the case. And then what they ended up with was $96 million opening.
Yeah. This is still $96 million more than Blade Runner 2049 made, though.
Okay, look.
Isn't that weird, though?
Just because you could point to an even worse performing movie doesn't make this extraordinary.
But Blade Runner, people are like, oh, it did pretty well. Right? So it's always about expectations.
They're kidding themselves. Anyone who thought Blade Runner did well. But having said that, Blade Runner was extraordinary. What a wonderful, wonderful movie.
96 million makes it the number 3 grossing movie in the movie draft so far.
That's crazy.
That's what I'm trying to get at here. Like Thor Ragnarok, 247 million. Like that's what you're supposed to see.
Yep.
Right? Justice League might not get to 200. With a $96 million opening, and that's what people are worried about.
So what does this do? Now, here's something we have not entertained the possibility of. We've been acting as if it's a fait accompli that The Last Jedi is going to make all the money in the world, but what if these are just indications that it doesn't matter how good your movie is, it's just a down season for movies?
Well, here's where Christy Cates comes into the picture, because Team Cord Killers is leading the way with $306 million, based largely on that $247 million from Thor Ragnarok. If you have that plus The Greatest Showman, you know, throws another few million on top of that.
And now Wonder is in there.
Could that conceivably beat 85% of The Last Jedi?
I'm starting to think so. I'm starting to think Last Jedi might do less than 500 million, in which case you could come out the winner. Let's say Cord Killers gets to 350, 370, 380. Like, I think it just might be a down season all told.
That's the only reason.
Also, you're very talented and you're good at the draft. How about that?
No, you picked the right movie, right? Like that's the key to winning the movie draft is picking the right movie. And you picked the only movie that can possibly challenge The Last Jedi, and that's Thor Ragnarok.
I guess that's the thing that I'm marveling at, is that Cord Killers has now, thanks to an additional $30 million from Wonder and whatever is still left in the tank for The Greatest Showman, you finally are achieving the level of number that makes me believe you could come out ahead of 85% of The Last Jedi. And for that, you are to be commended.
Well, thank you. I don't know. I still think Star Wars is gonna hit the top of this whole thing. But I feel good that we did get Thor, and I went to see Thor, and I was buoyed up further by the fact that it's an amazing, fantastic, fun movie to watch. So, yeah, I really want to wait and see how this turns out. The Greatest Showman is a Hugh Jackman vehicle too. So there's a Julia Roberts movie in Wonder, and a Hugh Jackman movie in The Greatest Showman. So I don't think those are going to do terrible numbers. I think they'll be okay.
Yeah,
maybe that'll help.
It'll be worth its $9 that you paid for it. I think you're right.
Yeah, I think $30 to $50 million. It could be that one movie is the difference that takes you out of the 300s into the 400s. Which, as long as you cross over into the 400s, I think you have a shot of overtaking Team Frog Pants.
Cool.
I mean, that'd I think Thor Ragnarok's going to keep making money too.
Yeah, I think so too. I tried to go see it again this for a third time this weekend.
I kind of see it again too.
I look at this rundown and I think everything is underperform until I look at Thor Ragnarok. I can't tell if 247 million should look smaller or should look bigger at this point, you know, 17 days after release.
I'll tell you what.
It looks right. It looks believable. Everything else looks way off.
Yeah, I agree. And I feel like over the next 2 weeks, there might be 50 million more left in the tank of Thor. Like, it really is one of those movies that stands up to a repeated viewing. And I'm not seeing a lot of competition for the, if you're trying to decide between the new release of Justice League or go watch Thor Ragnarok again, I got to feel like a lot of people are just going to go see Thor again.
I'm surprised at how tepid a lot of these movies are showing up. And I mean, even Coco, I believe, if I read this correctly, it's like the number one grossing movie of all time in Mexico. So, I mean, like, it's got legs and it's got, you know, it's got great animation. But I don't know, how well did that one do domestically?
It hasn't come out yet. It's November 22nd here in the U.S.
Oh, it's not even here yet. Okay. Yeah. So, well, I mean, that maybe is a a look ahead at what it might be doing. So whoever has that one will be.
Also, I'm really stoked about Coco. I was a huge fan of Grim Fandango, the Telltale game. It was good.
All right, folks. So there you go. That's a look at the movie draft. Now let's talk about the movie Serenity, the final episode, if you will, of Firefly, which at the time, I'm going to admit something really embarrassing right now. I went to see Serenity in the theater opening weekend. Very excited to see it with everyone, having never seen an episode of Firefly.
What was that like? Because I remember I also saw it opening night, and it was I had a gig the night before in Topeka, Kansas. So it was an all day drive, get up early, drive all day. And I believe we had like a flat tire. We had to get the car serviced, and I barely made it in time. And I was sitting there at the draft house, and I overheard somebody to the right saying like, apparently it was a whole TV show. Like they were Joss Whedon fans from the Buffy days, but didn't even know that about the whole Firefly phenomenon. So you essentially, I get to get in a time machine and interview you. I heard you over my shoulder.
I knew about Firefly. I had meant to watch it, but it disappeared before I could. My friend Patrick Norton basically told me everything about it, like why it was good and all of that, to the point where I was super excited to go see Serenity. And so I see it and I'm like, okay, I'm a little confused. I feel like there's definitely parts of this that I would enjoy more had I seen the show. But I like all these characters and it was a really fun story. I just didn't enjoy it as much as I would have had I obsessed about the show before it. But it was the thing that made me immediately go get the DVDs and say, okay, I've got to find out what the rest of this is about.
So I had the reverse experience in that I had gone through the DVDs and experienced the five stages of grief that come from experiencing Firefly, knowing that it's doomed. And upon watching that movie, I left the theater grinning ear to ear. And I remember thinking, this is what I had hoped to get from The Phantom Menace from the other prequel. I think that maybe The Phantom Menace was the only one that was out at that time. But it's like, I felt like I was made whole in a way that I dared not hope going into it. However, watching it again, 12 years later,
Really?
Wow.
It's not bad by any stretch. There's great writing. There's great dialogue. I think Malcolm Reynolds is a fantastic, you know, he filled the Han Solo shaped hole in our hearts. You get more of the world building and you get answers in spades, which are delightful. But I was astonished on this viewing at how much of it just looked so cheap. And cheap is a funny word to use when they spent, you know, $20 million on production for it. But just like the TV show, every planet looked like Southern California. Just like the TV show, every space vehicle they were driving around looked like a golf cart with stuff duct taped to it, you know? I none of this is to say that I didn't enjoy it and I wasn't glad for the revisit, but I was surprised at how effectively my memory had scrubbed those rough around the edges details from it.
Well, you definitely pay a lot more attention to those things than you used to. I have noticed this over the course of doing Frame Rate and Cord Killers. And I don't know if that's because you've done more production now and I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah, taking over.
But I wonder if when you saw it in the theater the first time, you just didn't notice a lot of it.
Oh, I was lost. I was lost in that world. I mean, to be clear, my experience of watching Serenity in the movie theater, easily one of my top 20 movie experiences, full stop, in my entire lifetime. It was just utterly delightful, joyful. It felt like a religious revival being around all these other brown coats and everything. I mean, you're talking to a guy who signed up in the forums to help figure out how he could help promote it, you know, because at the time, that whole you can't stop the signal thing, I mean, it was a movement. It was a movement. It was on the table that this could be the beginning of a new trilogy and all that stuff. And I wanted very, very much for its second life to be in the movies. But seeing it with a little more distance makes me acknowledge how unapproachable or how less approachable it is to people who aren't already familiar with the TV show.
But did you feel that way, Tom, when you saw it? Did you feel that it did not stand alone well on its own?
No, I felt curious, right? I felt like, huh, that was interesting. It's not as good as all these other people seem to think it was, but it was pretty good. I'd like to find out more, right? Then I went and watched the TV show, fell in love, and I've watched everything millions of times. But I am the reason they didn't get a second movie, because me and Eileen, my wife, both kind of walked out shrugging a little bit. Like, I don't know. And I think it was the kind of thing where, because it was so good for those who watched the TV show, but not that level. It was more of a mid-range movie for people who hadn't, because you needed some of that juice to get it over the top. It didn't spread. This movie wasn't the movie that people are like, even if you've never seen Firefly, you have to see it, right? And that's, I think, probably what kept it from being franchise of
other
movies.
See, and that's like extra sad to me, because I know that Fox didn't really support Firefly in the first place. I think there was a big kerfuffle about, like, they wanted to show it in widescreen and Fox wouldn't show it in widescreen. So they filmed it where they had characters on either end of the frame to kind of force them to show it in widescreen, and they didn't. So there's things getting cut off, and they just, I don't know why they never really believed in the show from the beginning, it seems like. So then, you know, this film comes out, and if you're in the verse and you go see the film, then you think it's amazing. If you're not in the verse, it's just an okay sci-fi movie, or maybe a good sci-fi movie. And they never got a chance to spin it around and make a fantastic, you know, Serenity Part 2 sci-fi movie. And that's just a darn shame, frankly, I think.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail right on the head there. That was watching it again with some distance made me, you know, I went into it, you know, full disclosure, trying to imagine what it's like to watch this movie not knowing the rest of the story. And I think you're right. I think they, given the binary choice between make it approachable to everybody or play to the base, they played to the base, and the base just wasn't big enough to generate the numbers they had hoped for.
Yes, exactly.
I remember thinking, like, first 15 minutes of the movie, did I miss something? Was there a part of this that I was supposed to see? Was there another movie? Because a lot of the beats around River and Simon and that flashback sequence and then the guy coming through and saying, okay, that's what happened, really felt like you're supposed to know who they are. Right. And it did not explain that. And I think that's one of the things that set me back.
Oh, my gosh. But they released, that was the first time I had seen any movie release the first 10 minutes of the movie for free online. This is 2005. That was a pretty big deal back in the day. And so as somebody who loved that television show, I watched online that first 10 minutes of it like 100 times. It was insane. And I was like, it just felt so rich and so many answers coming so fast. And the introduction of the operative.
That's the problem. It was answers to questions I didn't have.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Now, the thing is, there's a whole like Brian was talking about brown coats, and there's a whole subculture, like a Firefly subculture, a lot like a Star Trek or Star Wars subculture. It's smaller, obviously, but there's things like that. I think we talked about it one other time when I was on the show, that Firefly fan film, The Verse.
Yeah. Some people go and buy hardback copies of all of the comics because they just have to know everything about what's going on in The Verse.
There we go. Yeah. So, I mean, there's stuff that's still floating around. It's still got a fan base. And I sometimes ponder, what if they rounded up the cast and brought it back, you know, and like fast forward, you know, Serenity 20 years from now or whatever, they're all older and what's going on and what's happened to them in the meantime. And if it would catch on now, because you have to think too, sci-fi too, I think as a whole is a bigger verse than it was when we were first looking at the Firefly verse. So
yeah, think about this. Firefly was pre-Battlestar Galactica. And in fact, Battlestar Galactica owes a deep debt to the cinematography, the style. Battlestar Galactica started aping a lot of the visual styles, a camera, herky-jerky centering in and then punching in with the zoom. All of that had been established by Firefly beforehand, but became hallmarks of Battlestar Galactica.
Very true. Very, very true. And then the gritty feel, too. Like, I think you guys were talking about, you know, Brian, you're saying how it's like, oh, it looks like it was all filmed in Southern California. But I think that's just like the verse they were in was actually all those kind of planets. They weren't futuristic Star Trek neon colored planets. They were just kind of gritty. It was almost like a space Western, really, in a way.
Sure, you know? Sure.
Yeah. Another interesting perspective on this. I started watching it yesterday in the San Jose airport. On my phone.
In a public bathroom.
No.
It was not in a bathroom.
Okay.
Just to be clear. My phone does have the HDR screen. So I was like, ooh, yeah, this looks really nice. And I'm enjoying it. I'm like, wow, Serenity looks great. It really wears well. It looks awesome. But what I had not done was download it before I got on the plane.
Oh, no.
Even though I own it. I'd been streaming it. It didn't cache. I get on the plane. I'm like, ah, crap. So I have to wait till I get home. So I got home, get to the house. I'll just watch it on the TV. Wow. Serenity does not hold up well. It looks really grainy and just, you know, did not look good on the big HD TV because it just didn't hold up being blown up, even though it's a film. And so it's funny. I had the opposite reaction of you, Brian, for the first 30 minutes of the movie. And then watching it on HD, suddenly I could see the faults, right? I could see the things were like, oh yeah, I can forgive it. It still looks pretty good, but it's not nearly as good as I thought it was.
That final battle between the operative and Mal really in the theater felt super powerful and strong. And it's like, man, they're both about to die. I can't believe they're still standing up. It's like Cool Hand Luke. Wow. But watching it again, it just felt like a small set piece on characters that I wasn't as invested in last time. And again, you know, a lot changes over 12 years, you know, things change. But I'm really glad we went back and revisited this.
Yeah, me too.
Weirdly, I'm glad to at least have an understanding why it didn't do as well as I wanted it to at the time, because now I was able to see how many limitations there really were on it.
Yeah, it's funny. The thing that really popped to me watching this after watching everything in order over the course of several months, having time to think about it week to week, was how many things in that movie are lines I remember from Firefly. Here, so here's us on the raggedy edge, right? That I don't remember them being in the movie. I don't separate them. They're just Firefly, right? Mm-hmm. It's just the whole thing. But there's a big chunk of that movie about the time they're at Haven after the second time that just starts to drag. And nothing ever drags that much in the other TV shows, of course, partly because they're shorter, but there just is that part in Serenity where I'm like, okay, now they're going to get to Miranda and they're going to discover that they didn't stand up and like, give me back to the action. Give me back to the action now.
Yeah. And even the action, like absent watching the television show, it's not very miraculous or even terribly interesting to see River kill a bunch of, you know, the Reavers, you know, like, that is an amazing moment, given the context of the previous, you know, hours and hours. But it's to be expected. It's like if you're just watching the movie, it's like, yeah, she's a super weapon. So the door closes on the super weapon left in the room with Reavers. You're not surprised when the door opens and the super weapon won. You know.
Yeah, but we're also conditioned now. I mean, look at Thor. We were just talking about Thor. Look at the fight scenes in Thor. They are incredibly detailed and incredibly bright and cinematic and bouncy. And there's layers of all kinds of stuff going on, and that just wasn't the style at that time, you know. So yeah. We're conditioned differently, I think.
Agreed.
No, absolutely. Yeah. All right. Any last thoughts on Serenity before we move on?
Thank you, Serenity, for existing. Because I'm so thankful to have that button on the end of that. You know, that closure, that ability to have an idea of whose stories have ended and yeah, at least a hint of what direction the survivor stories are headed towards.
Yeah.
Agreed.
It's all lines from that show guide me sometimes, you know, get a job, keep flying, all that kind of stuff. Christy, any last thoughts from you?
I it's nostalgia for me. I just love the whole series, and I do still like the movie just because it's a nostalgic thing. I mean, there's a lot of films like that for a lot of people, and that's one of them for me. So I'll watch it over and over and be fine.
Oh yeah,
with it, so.
I'll keep watching it. Don't get me wrong. Christy Cates, ChristyCates.com. That's Christy with a K, Cates with a K. Thank you for joining us again.
Thank you guys for having me back on the show. I like being on talking with you guys as often as I can. So I appreciate inviting me back. Thank you.
Please come back soon.
I shall. Take care, you guys.
We're going to talk about Mr. Robot now in a spoilery way. So if you haven't seen Mr. Robot, go away. Unless you don't mind.
Everything from now shall rhyme. So stick with us if you have the wherewithal to do so.
Yeah, the time. Yes. All right. I am going to describe Mr. Robot 306 this way. What a pretty way to get nowhere.
What? Yes, and now you say we got nowhere, and maybe that's true if you care about the actual plot. I am completely consumed with our side quest, our theory from the fan that suggested that that Mr. Robot is about to veer into hard science fiction territory involving multiple realities.
And big tasty clues were dropped along the way.
Huge clues, starting with the fact that Blondie is, as a kid, watching Back to the Future cartoon about, you know, a show about multiple realities and so on. And again, Portia Doubleday, I can't remember the character's name.
Angela
later reiterates saying like, no, what about saving my mom, saving your dad? And it's like,
what are you talking about? They're dead.
That is like white hot fire in my mind when I heard that. I was like, I think this theory is gonna turn out to be right.
Yeah. No, it's when I say we got nowhere, that is what I mean. We didn't confirm the theory. We didn't reveal the theory. More and the juiciest hints that we've got were dropped.
Yeah.
But we really didn't go anywhere. Nothing actually happened until the very end when the show ends and rolls the credits before we find out exactly what it is.
Remind me of the last 5 minutes again.
Oh, the 71 explosions across the country.
That's right.
Orchestrated all terrorist attack.
Yes. It wasn't just the one building. They were blowing up a bajillion of them.
Which was, I got to the end of that, and it totally makes sense, right? Of course, like, if you can do it for one, just do it everywhere else.
Right.
But in that moment, I was so caught up in all the tension and the action of the moment that I was like, oh, that's right. There are a lot of other targets.
Yeah.
I think it was great. It was a great episode.
Well, and I guess I should rephrase. I'm being a little harsh when I say the prettiest way to get nowhere. We did get there. Mm-hmm. We did get to Elliot's plan getting thwarted because they blew up 71 sites, right? They knew he was redirecting the paper records. So in the end, we did get somewhere. But like you said, plot-wise, we didn't really make much progress. We knew they were going to blow up stuff. We didn't know it was going to be that. But all the events are going to happen next. At the same time, I didn't mind. This was joyous. This was wondrous to watch. I was never bored. And it was gorgeously shot.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, though. Everything in Mr. Robot, I understand the appeal that drew us to the show to the very beginning was the unreliable narrator. A side effect of that is that everything is floaty and dreamlike with brief periods of strong lucidity, where all of a sudden we're like, no, I clearly see what this show is about and where it's headed. It feels like it's been a long time since we've had one of those moments of harsh lucidity. And I'm
this season has been lacking it. I agree.
Well, even last season was everything just got fuzzier with like, okay, now there's the Dark Army. And then this season it's like, well, now we're retconning and showing how the Dark Army was kind of in it from the very beginning and so on. I very, very much am hoping that this season ends up like, don't tease us on this. Just give us, tell us it's multiple universes, make it flat, give us simplicity again, and set up, you know, now we have a new set of rules going forward.
Yeah. What if they do some kind of twist, and I'm not sure how you could do this to make me believe it. What if they do a twist where they do restore his father and Angela's mother, but Elliot no longer exists and is a figment of Mr. Robot's psyche.
Like a hypnotic reprogramming?
Well, and that's where thing? I start to go like, every way I can think of to do it sounds awful. So yeah. I don't know if you can pull it off.
Here's what I can see happening is getting clarity at the end of this season where picture Elliot turns the corner and the big reveal is at the CERN facility, you know, whatever. He turns the corner and he hears the voice and he's like, Mr. Robot, he's talking to me. He's trying to get in my head again. But then as he turns the corner, it's not him in his head. It's actually him on some kind of Skype call. And he's actually talking to his dad, who's still alive, 30 years older, in this alternate reality. He's like, pretty messed up, kiddo, huh? We got to talk, you know,
so like communication.
Yeah. It's thing. Like, you're not crazy. It's just the only way I can get into your world. I'm trying to solve things. I'm your dad. I'm Mr. Robot.
Hey,
you know,
walking you.
Exactly. And it's like, if that were to happen, then I would feel that sense of clarity, new set of rules. I can trust everything I'm seeing right here. I would like that very much. And then you can get creative again after that, but at least give me back that stability, because right now things are so floaty. Mm-hmm. It's hard for me to really understand the penalties or realities of anything at this point.
I had a theory watching this episode today that all of the White Rose stuff has been kept super vague and ambiguous, right?
Super vague. Like, I'm convinced that White Rose and her male counterpart mm-hmm. are in different realities. I'm not convinced that the story that we're seeing is all one reality.
Okay. I'm wondering, especially in so far as you have Elliot, who goes through the whole episode just to save the people in that building's lives, right? Mm-hmm. I don't wonder if down the line, instead of it taking this hard sci-fi turn, it takes a very realistic turn in the unveiling of, hey, the Dark Army are terrorists, and they are just they have their own zealotry, and their zealotry is that they can, I don't know, kill people back to death, back to life or something, right? Like, I think they're setting up all these really cool, like, ideas of multiple universes, time travel and all, but I don't wonder if if maybe they're going to pull the rug out under us and say, oh, no, of course none of that is happening. This is just terrorism.
I'd be fine with that, too, as long as there was clarity. Get me okay. to a place of feeling like it could be an illusion and I could turn out to be wrong later. But give me back the illusion of feeling like I see four walls and a ceiling above me. I understand the space I'm in, because right now everything is so mushy that like I just don't know. I just don't know what to believe about anything.
Here's a thing that's. I can see working up to a point, and then there's a point where I'm like, no, I don't like this idea. What if Angela is successful? Dark Army is successful. Timeline is restored. Angela's mother lives. Elliot's father lives. And then there is a scene where Elliot is talking to his father, and his father and him are having a joyous reunion. Oh my gosh, you're not in my head anymore. You're alive. And then someone turns to Mr. Robot, Mr. Alderson, and is like, who are you talking to? Mm. And Elliot's not there.
Oh, interesting. So double twist that Elliot was the figment.
I could see in that. The restoration, sure. Right, when, whatever they pull off,
there's no place causes, for him.
So you know, one of them to be then, in the other one's head.
Okay, as long
and
as.
And then the way forward becomes. Can we bring Elliot back to reality? Can he convince his dad to come back reality? And this is the part where I'm like, and any way you do that feels cheap to me. So I'm not sure where you go from there.
But I'll tell you what, though, I could stand an entire season of him being just a voice narrator and never really being in there, where he's just like, you know, like every episode begins with like, here I am trapped inside a body, forced to watch a movie I can't change. What can I do? You know,
I was real.
And then, he says to addressing us, he says, you know, something like, but I guess you've always felt this through this entire story, haven't you? You know, yeah. It's like, what is it like? This is new to me. You know, I don't know. I could see something like that happening.
Do you guys think that Elliot and Mr. Robot look enough alike? Like the thing that I really noticed in the episode today was that Angela and her mom are incredibly similar.
Yes.
Like they look.
Good casting.
They look really similar. She's got the right, like her, the mother in that opening flashback has all the same mannerisms as Angela.
The little girl too.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
As soon as they showed her, I'm like, oh, that's Angela. Like,
but
yeah.
Does Elliot look enough like Mr. Robot? I like the idea that Elliot is the figment and maybe Mr. Robot is what Elliot actually is on the outside. And
no, I'm not suggesting he is now.
Well, that's what
I'm suggesting
thinking.
That the restoration flips it. So what you're saying is, could we retcon it where it was always Mr. Alderson?
Maybe, or I don't even know about retcon. Maybe,
and he
maybe
just put on a hoodie.
I mean, think about because I was thinking about this because there's that scene where he leaves during the second evacuation of the recovery building, right? And he's walking out in the hacker hoodie and he's all looking really, you know, conspicuous. And like, would you do that? Is that the best look? Or is that an image of this good white hat hacker persona that someone would impress upon themselves? I don't know. I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you this much. Like at this point, this might be the squishiest the show has felt to me. Like,
but I love it.
Everything. Well, I think I'm at my limit of how much I can enjoy. I think I'm feeling the little tickling of frustration of like, man, are we going somewhere or not? And again, like the first season was great because by the end it felt like we definitely went somewhere. And granted, second season put on the brakes and all that stuff, does all the stuff you expect a second season to do. But now that we're in the third season, it's starting to feel a long time since I had my bearings and felt like we went somewhere.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess we'll find out, won't we?
Yeah.
And we will be the first to tell you, maybe not the first, but we will be here to tell you. In fact, if you back us on Patreon, you'll find out what we think really fast. Even though it's a week later, but well, like 4 days later. Anyway, spoiler in time. Thanks for supporting us. Patreon.com/cordkillers.
Love you.
Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.